The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UAP reality. I'm David Twitchell, and for the next hour, we'll be exploring the mysteries of the UFO, UAP, and abduction phenomenon.
Britt Elders is an investigative author and documentary filmmaker who traveled the world exploring a variety of topics, including the mysterious world of UFOs. She has participated in several in-depth investigations, including the Billy Meyer case and the waves of UFO sightings in Mexico, which began in 1991 and continue to this day. The CEO of ShirleyMaclaine.com, Britt continues to research and write for herself and others. Britt is the author of UFO Contact from the Pleiades, Volumes 1 and 2. And I'm happy to have her with us on the show today. Welcome to the show, Britt.
Thank you, David. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's our pleasure. So, for those of our listeners who are not familiar with the Billy Meyer case, could you please tell us a little bit about Billy?
Sure. The case started in 1975 in January, and Billy Meyer was and is a simple man. He's very humble, earthy, fifth grade education. At that time, he was a night watchman. He got a cooling sensation while he was sitting at the kitchen table one evening, and then he had kind of an impulse to go get on his moped and drive out into the forest. As he drove, he started getting telepathic instructions as to which way to turn and where to go. Mm-hmm. He ended up at this clearing, and he sat there for a minute trying to figure out why he was there, and then he heard a sound he couldn't describe. It was a high-pitched frequency, and he looked up, and there was a craft, and the craft slowly dropped to the earth. As it did, he wasn't startled. He just wanted to know what it was. From behind walked a woman named Samyasa. They sat down, they talked for about an hour, and that was the beginning of a series of contacts that produced photographs, movie footage, audio recordings of the craft, that strange sound he had heard, dozens and dozens of witnesses, as well as metal samples. It continued for several years. He's still having contact today, both telepathic and face-to-face, but he's no longer getting any evidence.
He's no longer collecting any evidence. Why do you think that is?
He asked them for more evidence. This was back in, 82 or 83. And he said, I'd like to take more photographs. And they said, how many do you need? He already had hundreds of photographs at that point in time. So they said, you know, what's it take? When do you stop needing this as some form of evidence?
Yeah. And he said,
darn. He was really frustrated, but there's nothing he could do about it.
So
when he tried to take images, they just came out black.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought he had a few images of the people.
Oh, he has hundreds of images of the craft. But after he asked them if he could take more, every time he tried to take more, he ended up just with footage that, like a 35 millimeter roll that had been exposed.
So you think he got too greedy? Is that it?
Well, people, it was him going back to more people wanting more things. People that visited him said, oh, you've got to get new photographs and this has got to happen. And he was trying to appease them more than himself.
Yeah. Yeah. You never can get enough evidence to satisfy the skeptic, can you?
That's true. That's very true.
It would seem like Billy Meyer would have realized that, you know?
I'm not sure that he really did realize it. I think in the beginning, the contacts were pretty simple. They discussed a lot of different things, but it was more of the Pleiadians telling him, look, we're here to let people know they are not the only thinking beings in the universe, and we're allowing you to have this physical evidence, to have it examined, to document the fact that you are not the only thinking beings in the universe. Mm-hmm. And Billy just sort of continued that train of thought throughout all of the contacts. So he always felt like there would probably be more and more evidence.
Yeah. So what got you involved with the Billy Meyer case in the first place?
Well, my husband and I and our associate, Tom Welch, had a company called Intercept, which is an ECM, electronic countermeasure company. And we kept Fortune 500s and financial institutions from being eavesdropped on and wiretapped. Mm. So we had, as part of that company, an investigative branch. A friend of ours, Colonel Wendell Stevens, came to us and he says, you got to take a look at this case. Well, we weren't willing to risk our reputation with our banks and people like that and tell them, yeah, we're going to go look at a UFO case now. And we said no. And then Billy invited Wendell over to Switzerland. Wendell went, he came back, and he says, seriously, there's much more here than we can just, you know, say, oh, this is a happenstance photograph. He told us about hundreds of photographs he had seen. We had a client in London, and we decided we'd just pop over to Switzerland, meet with the man. We figured we could probably debunk the case in about 24 hours. We were there 5 days. And we came home with inner negatives of the images. We came home with movie footage, the metal pieces, recordings of the craft, and dozens of witness statements.
So that should be enough evidence for the skeptic. And yet,
it's not.
It's not. No.
But that's okay. You know, you have to have, I think skeptics are healthy. Because they sort of make you think a little broader and go a little deeper into an investigation. So I don't have a problem with that at all.
No, I always say healthy skepticism is necessary, especially in this kind of business.
Yes. You know?
But at some point in time, you've got to say, okay, I've seen the evidence, you know, and there's plenty of it. And so what am I holding on to my skepticism for? But
well, one of the interesting things about this case, and one of the reasons we re-released the books, Volume 1 and Volume 2 now, is it's 45 years after our investigation and the first publishing of these books. So at that time, 45 years ago, we didn't have phones that took incredible images. We didn't have Photoshop. We didn't have things where we could really manipulate things on computers because we didn't have home computers back then.
Right.
This is back in the mid-70s. So looking at the evidence now that Billy had and all of the analysis that was done on it, you kind of have to open your eyes and say, wow, there really might be something to this.
Hmm. So what were some of the most important aspects to you of this case?
To me, it was the metal. Mm-hmm. It was analyzed by Marcel Vogel, who brought in 42 other scientists. He was the chief chemist at IBM and one of the few people we could find that had a scanning electron microscope to really get into the metal at that time. It was very unique. It had thulium in it, which is a rare earth element. It's very costly to extract, and it's extremely difficult to find. But it also was unique because it was a cold fusion process. It was a layer of crystal and a layer of metal and a layer of crystal and a layer of metal. Mm. It hadn't been melted and poured like metals were at that point in time. It had to be created in some type of a cold fusion vacuum.
Mm. And metallurgists looked at this, right?
Yes. 42 different metallurgists. In fact, I just met one of them that I had never met before a few weeks ago in Phoenix. And he was adding some pieces to the story that we didn't know from Marcel and the other scientists. It was quite interesting.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was the Billy Meyer case or some other case, but there was one instance where a metallurgist broke down the sample of, that he was given, mm-hmm. and said, yeah, everything that is in this sample is of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is, you can't put these elements together. They won't mix.
Right.
At least the way, at least with our technology, we cannot mix them. We can't make an alloy of them.
Yeah.
And yet, there it is. You know?
Exactly.
Was that the case with Billy Myers?
That was one of the things, because they were finding elements that we knew existed here on Earth. Mm-hmm. But how did they put it together?
Right, right. So I guess that was the Billy Meyer case.
And how do they get the crystal in a separate compartmentalized piece of the metal? So you had, like I said, crystal, metal. How did that happen? That doesn't happen naturally.
They still can't figure that out, eh?
No, they can't.
So how long did your investigation last with Meyer?
7 years.
7 years.
Yeah.
You went for a couple of days, and 7 years later?
Yeah. 7 years later, we threw our hands up and we said, what else can we do with it? We had been to so many photogrammetric people. We had been to Dr. Michael Malin at U of A. We had worked with Jim Delatoso, Dr. Robert Post at JPL, Eric Eliason at USGS. We took the sounds to Boeing Labs and Groton Naval Facility, where they have a sound bank of all sounds. We had the movie footage analyzed both here and in Japan. We brought in a special effects man, Wally Gentleman, who did the special effects for Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Mm-hmm.
And he made us a little UFO so we could film this UFO and compare it to Billy's photographs. Well, when we had the photographs and we took them down, we had them digitized. You could see in the digitized images that the Meyer craft, comparing it to like a branch in a tree that we had a known size for, was 21 feet in diameter. Our little model was just shy of a foot. And you could definitely see the string suspending it. So we did everything we could to try to figure out how Meyer was doing this. And at the same time, you hit a point where you go, what else can I do? I've run out of things to do. And at that point, we said, okay, we put this out for the public. We let them make the decision, because we don't want to be in a position of saying this is real or this isn't real. Just this is what we found. Mm-hmm. This is the analysis that was done. Here are the results. You decide. And we did a documentary film, UFO Contact from the Pleiades, a documentary film, same title. It has even more in there, because we even gave Billy at Do you know what a PSE test is?
No.
Psychological stress evaluation.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It's like a lie detector test.
Right.
Only it measures the tremors in your voice when you're talking. And so we gave Billy a PSE test, and we brought it back to one of the foremost people in Colorado that could read this. And he ran it, and he says, you know, he was truthful about talking about the UFOs, what he had seen, that he had had contact. But what he lied about was having coffee. And the morning we gave him the test, he had promised his wife he would stop drinking so much coffee. And so when the question came up, do you drink coffee? He said, no, and he does.
That's funny. That's a good comparison to use, you know?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. I have to take a break just long enough to remind my listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, Making Waves. And I'm David Twitchell, your host for We Are Not Alone. I'm speaking with Brett Elders, investigative reporter and filmmaker, documentary filmmaker. She's done in-depth investigation into the Billy Meyer case. Anyone who's familiar with ufology is familiar with Billy Meyer. So he allegedly, I will say allegedly, we have, you know, that for legal reasons, we have to say allegedly, was in contact with Palladians from the Palladian star system. How did he know? They probably told him we're from Palladium star system. How did they communicate with him?
In his native Swiss German, although he did say that they had a language translator. So if they ran into a word that they didn't fully understand or couldn't communicate to him, they would use this translator. And the translator enabled them to speak any language on the planet. That was interesting to us because at that time, there was a company called Casio that was just developing language translators for people. And it hadn't even hit the market at that point in time.
Mm-hmm.
So that was interesting that they were talking about that back in 1975.
Yeah. Yeah, they had their own translators.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Now, this case has been steeped in controversy.
It has.
For years, you know. How do you react when someone says, this is not real, this can't be real?
It's okay. They have their reasons for saying they think it's not real, but then I always end up asking, have you really looked at the evidence? And I have to tell you, the whole time that we were working on this, no one reached out to us and said, let us take a look at what you have. No one.
Yeah.
No one from the UFO community. So there were many stories out there about Billy that he was a fraud and a hoaxer and all of this, but no one ever looked at the evidence. And that to me is really sad because as an investigator, and that's where my background is, and it's very strong in that, whether it's Murder One or it's counter-espionage or it's a UFO case, it has the same criteria. You have to deal with the evidence. You do not deal with hearsay. I can't say for 100% that Billy had these contacts as an investigator on this case because it didn't happen to me. So right. I do understand when people say, this can't be real. Okay, you've got an out. You're fine. That's okay. But take a look at it and really know what you're talking about before you start attacking. Yeah. And that's the only thing. I'd rather have a discussion about it than somebody come up and just say, oh, it's a hoax and it's fake. Why do you think that? I want to know why you think that.
Yeah, I've had pictures of... I have spirit pictures, ghost pictures. And one of which I'm looking at right now, one of which I had a psychic. Have you ever heard of Matt Frazier?
No, I haven't.
Okay, he's a world-famous psychic medium. And he looked at it and he told me that's spirit energy.
Mm-hmm.
But what I was getting at was, I'll show them the photo as evidence, uh-huh. and I will tell them everything I've done to try to debunk this. Because
yeah.
as an investigator, the first thing you do is try to debunk it.
Right.
What is it, whatever's left over is the unknown. But at any rate, it's a reflection. It's this or that. And I said, well, then you're saying that you could do this on your computer? Oh, sure. Fine. Here you are. Here's a copy of the picture. Do it on your computer and send me the the copy.
Mm-hmm.
Never hear from him again.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, that's one of the things with the Meyer case. We invited everybody. Okay, if you really think it's a hoax, duplicate everything, not just one picture, but everything, all of the hundreds of photographs, the movie footage, the metal, the audio recordings, and tell me how the witnesses saw these craft. Even people that didn't like Billy, that lived in the area and they thought he was a little goofy because he was having these experiences, they admitted to seeing these ships and they didn't know what they were.
Really?
Yeah. So, and it, of course, because they didn't know what it was, they were a little afraid of it and very afraid of Meyer because they didn't know what it was. So that was interesting to us that even people that didn't care for him admitted to seeing them, the ships.
And so how could they possibly say this can't be real or this isn't real?
They,
I saw myself.
They did, I know. There have been a couple that have seen things and just said, I can't explain it. I don't know what it is, but it's not real.
Right.
It's like it's a hallucination or something that happens. and one particular individual who ran a dairy farm right down the hill from Meyer, he and his family had seen the ship several times. And he said, it's just too frightening. I know it's not God. I know it's not our military. We don't have anything that looks like that. So I don't even want to know what it is. It just can't be real. And that was the end of the discussion. He wasn't going any further with it at all.
Mm-hmm. You see, they say it can't be God.
Yeah.
But you know, in antiquity,
yeah,
they saw these same things and they said, oh, it must be God.
It must be God, right.
God or gods, you know, or mm-hmm. angels of God. Angels
right.
of God. So do you think extraterrestrial civilizations have visited our planet in antiquity?
Yes, absolutely. I really do. When we got into this and after we had gotten the physical evidence really into a pattern of getting investigated by a lot of different sources, we got into the history of the Pleiades. And throughout cultures all around the world, they talk about how the Pleiades came down and imparted knowledge, mm-hmm. people from the Pleiades. And then we found it true of Arcturus, Sirius, all of these different star systems. And they seem to have, in the history, whether it's oral history, written history, legends, it's sort of they helped us along the way. They helped us develop more. They taught us agriculture. They taught us how to build an observatory, what to look for in the stars, things like that. And it was really intriguing, but it is throughout history. And then when you get into, of course, the ancient alien thought, and you really start looking at some of these things, it's mind-boggling. I mean, there's just so much there. I figure it's just a short while before they eventually show up again. But I think many of them have been here in the past.
Yeah. In the Betty and Barney Hill case,
yeah,
did those visitors claimed to be from the Pleiades, or was it Sirius?
No, Sirius, I thought.
Sirius?
And at one point, somebody that had heard the hypnosis tape said Zeta Reticula.
Zeta Reticula, that's what I'm thinking of. Who knows? There's so many star systems out there. I mean,
yeah.
We're just a speck. We're just a speck in the whole scheme of things.
We're just a tiny part of it, yes.
Oh, tiny, tiny, tiny. And do you think these off-world visitors only come from the Pleiades or many different areas of the universe or dimensions?
I think that it's the dimensional aspect is more than likely. I think they come from many different places. I don't think it's just the Pleiades that has life out there. Like Semyasa told Billy, we need to realize we're not the only thinking beings in the universe, because as we set our sights on space, which we're doing now, we're looking at colonizing Mars and then going further into space. Mm-hmm. They want us to realize we're going to have to learn to work with a lot of different civilizations. And one of the things that concerns them is we haven't learned how to work with ourselves yet, with each other.
That's true.
Until we get to that point, we're not going to be able to really get out into space mm-hmm. and experience what that is. So we have to do some work here on this planet to try to learn from each other rather than constantly fight each other.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder when that's going to change.
Oh, man, cross your fingers. I don't know.
We're too tribal, you know?
Yeah, we are.
I've given up.
No, don't do that.
Oh, I'm old enough now I can give up.
No, okay.
I'll just drift off. have you looked into other abduction cases? What are your thoughts about them?
A few. I have talked to several abductees that it's interesting, like Travis Walton is here in Arizona. Mm-hmm. And his case, I mean, that was fascinating and happening about the same time as Meyer. And it was intriguing to us how one man could have an abduction and another man have a contact. So we tried to sort of define what that was about. And we found a lot of people actually took a step forward, like Travis did. When he saw that object, he walked towards it. He made the overture to them. And when you ask them, do you think that maybe you invited that experience? Most of them will say yes. If they were steeped in fear, it is a totally different thing. And if they didn't want any part of it, then I think the abduction aspect of it has to be looked at differently. But mm-hmm. I think many of the individuals that I've talked to have said, yeah, I saw this thing and I walked towards it. I wanted to know what it was. And so, yes, I probably did invite the experience.
Yeah. I had the pleasure of having Travis Walton on my show quite a long time ago, and he recounted his experience. And I think that he was just curious.
Yeah.
What in the world was this thing? And then when he got close enough, you know, it sparked. He got a connection with him accidentally.
Mm-hmm.
And knocked them to the ground, and they said, "Oops, I think we killed one of these guys, one of these creatures." And so gathered them up and nursed them back to health.
Yeah.
And
then scared the hell out of him when they dropped him off and he didn't know where he was. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But the thing is, all of his buddies that were there with him told the same story.
Yes.
Passed the lie detector test with flying mm-hmm. colors, and well, it couldn't be. That couldn't be. People just aren't abducted by aliens. They like to call them little green men from Mars, because that's so laughable. Now he's a little green man from Mars, and everybody laughs.
Yeah.
So, and that's what they've been trying to do, is keep us laughing at that. But now I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, very true, but we're we're way beyond that now. It's not the framework. I mean, when you think what Betty and Barney had to go through and the ridicule they put up with, and Travis, the ridicule he went through.
Oh, yeah.
And this prevents people from actually expressing what's happening. But I think times are changing and people are becoming more comfortable saying, instead of whispering, they say, oh, guess what I saw? And they're excited about it. Before, it was always, you know, you went into a corner and you said, I saw something I can't explain.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't happen so much anymore.
Not so much.
Yeah.
So what do you think about the government's release of UAP material?
I love it. I just think we're a little slower on the uptake than we should be. They're getting there. I mean, they really are. I wish they wouldn't approach it with so much fear. In the hearings, that's what you take away, is all of this fear that everybody's steeped in. And I think if we had more of an open mind and an open heart, we could learn a lot more than just being afraid that they're going to be the bad guys. My personal feeling is the U.S. government is running slow because other countries around the world are very much involved in releasing information, setting things up. But the people of the U.S. don't know about that. And that's amazing to me. Some of the things that we were involved with in Mexico never made it up here. People didn't know about it for the longest time. And yet it was really a phenomenal experience that was happening in Mexico. So we're getting there. We're just slow. And we do have to lose the fear.
I think U.S. knew about all of this.
Yeah.
The Western world knew about what they were doing elsewhere, but they just weren't releasing it to the public, like, say, Colombia.
Yeah.
Colombia just said, hey, they're here, so what am I going to do?
Brazil, same thing.
Brazil?
Yeah. Brazil had a great release and a lot of generals involved with that one. Yeah.
But I've heard...
And Japan is open to it. I mean, it's not like it's just what we would consider third world countries or anything like that. It's Japan. It's China. China used to put out their own book, their own magazine on UFOs. Russia, look what they're doing in Star City. The UK is even more forward in many cases than we are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have been lagging behind for so long. And then there was, I'm not going to remember the name of it now, the French document that, help me here. You're lost too.
Uh-huh.
The French document came out saying, you know, these things are real.
Right.
And the U.S. is behind time on it. They should come out with it. And we just ignored it.
Well, look at the work that the Vatican was doing with Father Balducci.
Mm-hmm.
And so for the Vatican to be even curious about these things, I mean, that's really something people need to be aware of, but so many people still aren't.
There's rumors, at least, that the Vatican has a plethora of information in the basement of, in the Pope's basement, shall we say.
Yeah, I would not be surprised at all.
Yeah.
I would find that to be probably credible.
Have you ever been approached by any government agency or threatened in any way?
Not at all. No? In fact, we made kind of a pact to get into some of the laboratories. Like when we were analyzing the sounds and we were at the research facility at the naval base at Croton, the man we were working with said he'd love to do it. And we said, look, we're going to give you the sounds to check to see if you can find something that replicates it somewhere in that sound bank. But if you learn anything from it, it's yours to work with so long as you give us the same information.
Yeah.
And we had no problems that way. When we were up at Boeing Labs, they wouldn't let anybody wear their lab Boeing place tag. But they said, anything we find, we'll share with you. But can we keep the information ourselves? And we said, sure. And we had no problems with that. So we never were threatened. We never had anyone come after us. Never had Men in Black show up. Never had our printing presses bombed or anything like that. Yeah.
Nobody said, keep quiet about this. I don't care what
no.
you want. Keep quiet. No.
No. In fact, we, because of Intercept, we had a lot of connections with various intelligence organizations. And we met with a man who was MI5, and he was just like a sponge soaking everything in London. And he was telling us, this is great. And he says, can I tell my friends? And we said, sure. The more people that know, the more yeah. people that are curious, the better for everyone.
Yeah. Tell everybody.
Absolutely.
Share it with everybody. And you tell one person, not in a group, but you
right.
tell one person about your own personal experiences, and I saw this or whatever, 4 out of 5 of them are going to have a story for you.
Yes.
Their personal story or a loved one or friend who shared their experience, 4 out of 5 of them are going to have that experience too.
Yeah, David, it would be so great if we could, if we had a place, maybe MUFON's a place for this, but a place where everybody that has a story, that has had an experience, can put that story so it can be easily accessed. We need an archive.
Yeah.
So that mankind all over the world can access this to learn from it. We've got to hit a place like that before long because there's so much happening.
Yeah. What is your connection, if any, with MUFON?
None.
Well, then you didn't know that MUFON is the place for that.
Well, that is a good place for it. There's, I know KUFOS, I know MUFON, APRO, all of those, but
yeah.
it really is something that needs an archive that can be accessed by anyone, anywhere in the world. It's
yeah.
just too important right now that we do get it through our little heads, mm-hmm. that we're not the only thinking beings out there, that we need to be aware of this. We need to be knowledgeable. That allows us to be discerning, to not be locked into fear. There are so many different aspects of good that come out of an archive like that.
Right. So I need to take one more break to tell my listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. I'm David Twitchell. You're listening to We Are Not Alone, and we're speaking with Britt Elders. And she's a researcher and an author of the book, and I've lost that page now. And where is it? Tell us the name of that book.
UFO Contact from the Pleiades.
From the Pleiades, okay. I have it here on my paper, but now that I've scrolled down, I can't scroll back up again. Find it. have you ever had your own personal UFO encounter?
Yes, several.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Okay, tell us about the first one. Let's
it's hard
at
to
the
be.
Beginning.
It's hard to be an investigator and an experiencer, too. It's kind of fun. I was with my parents. We were driving to California.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in January. Snowy. I mean, the mountains were just covered in snow, full moon. And Mom and I looked up out the passenger window, and we saw this object. And we watched it, and then we said, are you seeing that? To each other. My dad kept driving. Now, my dad was a rocket engineer. He worked with Von Braun. So he was very, very left-brained. This thing came overhead, and it was huge. And we yelled, stop the car. My dad stopped the car, got out, looked, and said, "Where would you land that SOB?" It was that big. Excuse me. So, yeah, that was my first really big experience.
What shape was this thing?
Like a cigar with a little bit of a pointed front end.
Okay.
Silent, totally silent.
Did it look like a Zeppelin?
Not at all. Mm-mm. It closer to an arrow on the front end.
Really? Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm.
And then it had like a rounded area right in the middle.
Hmm. And when it, I assume it took off.
It did, very
how,
slowly.
how
Truckers
fast?
were stopped. We were stopped.
Really?
Yeah.
How fast did it go taking off? Zip off or
No,
slowly?
slowly. It disappeared off over where it would have been headed over Sedona.
Hmm. Okay, Sedona, that's a weird place. Am I right?
It is.
So.
There.
Yeah. So that was your first experience, right?
Yeah. In Mexico, I've seen many, many things down there. And in South America, in Ecuador. Mexico, wow, there's a place called Casita Blanca.
Mm-hmm.
It's in a little town outside Pueblo, which is called Atlixco. We met with the mayor there because they were having UFO sightings every single night. And we said, "Are you worried about this? Are you concerned that these things are going to harm your people?" And he says, "No, if they were going to hurt us, they would have done that a long time ago."
Mm-hmm.
He had just the best attitude. And he says, "You've got to go to Casita Blanca." So we said, "Okay." And we did. And we were with a film crew. And we brought them to this little area. You climb up a hill. So we were sitting there waiting to see what would happen. And before long, the whole town starts showing up. They're bringing grandma and grandpa and beer coolers and kids. They're waiting for the UFOs to come in.
Mm-hmm.
They were having the best party waiting for these things to come in. But we got footage. We were with Nippon Television. And we were watching and so surprised. All of a sudden, this Delta wing shows up. But it didn't fly like in a straight line like a plane would. No, this thing was going straight up, making right angle turns, and then slowly lowering down and then going straight up again. And it just was really remarkable. And it happened every night. We went back for three nights in a row, different types of ships, some that seemed small, some that looked like they were pretty massive, but they were more lenticular. Quite unusual, quite fascinating.
Wouldn't it seem logical that they would have scrambled fighters to intercept these?
We would have up here in Mexico. They've done that a couple of times. They have FLIR footage
Mm-hmm.
that they've taken of these objects, but they weren't that interested. It was becoming kind of a commonplace thing down there.
Yeah. You say we would have up here. Yeah, they're threatening now to shoot him down.
Yes.
Which
yes.
was a Truman trick. And we lost a lot of good pilots because
yeah.
of that. Shoot him down. They don't mean us any harm, but they will defend themselves.
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense to shoot it down. I know
No.
that. And especially in Mexico, January 1st, 1993, going back a few years. But on that day, Reforma, which is the longest street through Mexico City, people literally came to a stop, got out of their cars, laid on the hoods, and watched UFOs go over. It was on the 6 o'clock news, the 9 o'clock news, 10 o'clock, front page of the newspapers the next day. We never heard a word about it up here. So they weren't shooting him down. They were curious.
Yeah.
And there's a difference in the attitude down there. In Mexico, the people really want to know what's going on, but they're not afraid. And I don't know if it's the religious background. We've talked to some of them about that. They expect miracles and they look at this as a miracle. We don't know if it's just the openness based on their history, because they had Quetzalcoatl coming in and all of that. Don't know what it is, but they're much more open and receptive and not afraid to tell the public.
Yeah.
And up here, we're still trying to feed the public pablum and not tell them everything they need to know.
Right, right. Like the hearings, they say, well, I can't tell you that. I can tell you that in a skiff, but, well, all of this information needs to be put out.
Yes.
Unless it's, really dealing with security from another country. If it's dealing with security from ET, from another world, from another galaxy, whatever, or from another dimension, we have the right to know.
I agree.
We're all grown up now.
Yeah. And the kids. The kids are more knowledgeable about these things than many of the grown-ups. It's quite amazing.
Yeah. So we don't want them growing up like we grew up, huh?
No.
Or don't talk about it.
Yeah, don't talk about it and be afraid. Yeah.
In my encounter, we were told it was the Northern Lights. I mean, we saw a craft. It was the Northern Lights. And I said to my mother, I was a kid. I said, the Northern Lights are bands of ribbons, like ribbons of light.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have smoke with it. Well, she said, if the government tells us it's the Northern Lights, then it's the Northern Lights.
Okay.
And I've often thought about that. I'm telling you what she said verbatim.
Oh, my
If
gosh.
Your government tells you, then believe them.
There was that space and time, but we're past that. We don't need the government to tell us anything anymore. We need to do our own research and make our own decisions.
Yeah, well, good luck with that now.
Well, I just keep pushing it because I know that it's going to hit somebody out there where they're going to want to do the research and make a decision. Yeah.
So what other events happened in your life with UFOs?
Oh, boy. Well, one thing that happened in Switzerland that was intriguing was Billy had gone to a contact. He had told us not to follow him. And we said, okay. So we stood outside. We were waiting for him. And it was about 2 o'clock in the morning. Everything was pitch black. Lee and I were leaning against this little outdoor camper. And suddenly everything lit up. I mean, light above, below, through, with a blue-white light that had no source. It was around us, in front of us, behind us, everywhere. It was just a massive bright light. Happened 3 times. A few minutes later, here comes Billy walking out of the clearing. Yeah, and he's, did you see them come back in? And that was what he said the light was the ship coming in at that point in time.
Goodness.
Go ahead. Yeah.
So you were able to get firsthand evidence of something weird,
Several times. Something that
Billy Meyer or any human could not have reproduced, huh?
Several times. One time, Lee was on the roof with Billy and they were repairing the roof. The ladder was next to Lee on the right side. Billy was on his left side. And they were carrying on a conversation. There is no way to get off the roof of that farmhouse. It's a really steep pitch on the roof. And there was only one ladder. Lee turned around to talk to Billy and he was gone. He didn't go down the ladder, which Lee was right next to, and he didn't fall off the roof. And a few hours later, he came walking down the road and said that they had picked him up off the roof and he had gone to a contact. There is no way that the man got off the roof. There were several of us down beneath on the ground talking to each other and talking to Lee and to Billy. And he was just gone. How do you explain that? And then another time, again, we had a Japanese film crew with us. And we had seen Billy leave for a contact. It was pouring rain. He was walking. We got up that morning and we followed his steps. And we filmed the whole thing. Going all through the forest, walking back, hit a clearing. And in the middle of this clearing, his footsteps disappeared.
Billy's dead.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So we had a lot of unique experiences while we were there.
Do you think in instances like that, you and Lee and everybody else around you are switched off, so to speak? And then.
What do you mean?
Your minds just freeze. That's
yes.
You know, your minds freeze. You don't see, you don't hear, and time stands still, and Billy's taken up or whatever that is they want to do. And then when he returns, you're switched back on and go along like, what happened? Where were you?
You know, that could be. I would liken that to the experience I had with my parents driving too, because during that experience of watching that massive UFO go overhead, we lost 3 hours of time.
Okay.
So I get that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting.
Yeah. So in 1997, Billy Meyer's ex-wife told interviewers that, you know where I'm going.
Oh, yeah.
Photos with spaceship models.
Garbage can lids, yeah.
Yeah, garbage can lids and the beautiful women that he had taken pictures of were actually a couple of the dancers from the Gold Diggers. Remember?
That's what she said.
That's what she said.
The only thing I can say is I have Calliope, Poppy, on camera while they were married and while she was still happy saying, I've seen these things. I have photographs and video of her children drawing pictures showing us what they had seen. I would have to say Calliope, and I get it, her life was turned upside down.
Yeah.
People came from all over the world and demanded time with Billy all hours of the day and night. There's nothing nice about people invading your space.
No.
And that's really what happened to them as a family and to her specifically, because she had to care for these people, feed them, babysit them until Billy would talk to them, things like that. So I get her anger and her frustration, which I think is why she said what she said.
Right.
Because like I said, I've got her on film saying, these are real. I've seen them many times. In fact, she recorded one of the recordings of the craft, the audio sounds. She was on one side of a field. Billy was on another. They both had cassette recorders and they recorded the sounds together. Mm-hmm. To see if there was any difference there. So I get that. And I understand why she would be so angry. There's a lot of bad blood between them, which is sad.
Yeah.
But I know the kids. I mean, I've been in contact with a couple of them as adults, the children. They still believe everything that their father says, but they still believe what they saw as well.
Yeah, I was going to say they've witnessed things themselves.
Right.
So you can believe your father, But yeah. You can also be skeptical of your father's, especially in this type of thing.
Right.
But if you've experienced it yourself, that skepticism goes out the window, doesn't it?
It sure does.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
So, yeah, in Meyer's defense, this thing about the gold diggers was mentioned in his science fiction book, Disclosure, The Future Is Now, Graham Klingbein.
Okay.
Yeah, science fiction book. Okay, so you're going to believe what he says in a science fiction book?
Well, not only that, I got to go back. I have no way of analyzing those photographs.
Yeah.
I mean, I really don't. I know later on we ran some of the gold digger footage, and yeah, there's a blonde and a brunette, but there's several blondes and several brunettes. But that doesn't mean anything. They didn't look alike. What do you do with that? I mean, I don't have a way to prove or disprove that. That's going to be Billy's truth, not mine. Yeah. I can only report what I found and what I experienced, but I cannot say everything in his case is 100%. I don't know. That's his reality. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the reality somewhat of everyone now.
That's true.
Nowadays. So where can our listeners go to check out more of your work?
They can go to my website, BritElders.com, one T in Brit, B-R-I-T, Elders, E-L-D-E-R-S.com. I'm on Facebook and LinkedIn and all of those things. And so it's pretty easy to find me.
So your book, once again, is?
UFO Contact from the Pleiades, Volume 1 and 2, the 45th Anniversary Edition.
And this came out how long ago? 45 years ago?
The original printing was in 1978.
Ah.
Yeah, the original printing, and we re-released it because people need to know. They need to be able to make their own decisions as to what they believe and what they don't believe.
So when you say re-released it, did you update it with any new information?
Oh, or? Yeah.
Okay.
I have... I wrote a preface to it, an afterword for it. Shirley MacLaine wrote a piece for it. Jaime Maussan wrote a piece for it. So, yes, it's got quite a bit of new information. It's 200 pages, 10 inches by 10 inches, packed with photographs and lots of details.
Can this be purchased at Amazon,
Amazon
Kindle,
and bookstores, wherever books are sold.
I say about my books, wherever fine books are sold.
There you go.
So I really appreciate you coming on the show, Britt, and hopefully we can, when you get more information, just drop me an email. You got my email address, and
sure.
Let me know, and we'll come back on with more information.
Oh, that sounds great, David. Thank you so much.
I was going to say, though, this Kindle version of your books, they have the pictures in them and all
it
of
does.
The whole Billy Meyer thing, huh?
It's the whole thing.
It's the whole thing.
It's both hardback, or if you prefer Kindle, it's on Kindle. And like I said, there's a documentary available, too.
Very good. Thanks again for joining us, Britt.
Oh, thank you so much.
Have a good one.
It's been great.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
And I want to thank you, the loyal listener. Go to WHFR's homepage, scroll down to We Are Not Alone, and click on the headline, which will take you to where you can find my website with all the archived shows. Or click on the Talk Shows button. Then the We Are Not Alone button for the latest show archives. And please join me the first Monday of each month at 2 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UAP phenomenon. And until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you, to keep an eye on the sky.